all shake with noise. We can't sleep, we can't think.
Say what? Say what radio show? With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
Hello. I've got a new mouse, and the mouse is it's a trackball instead of the other kind, and it's confounding me. I'll get it. This is only my second show of doing this, and I didn't realize I had to hit so many teeny little buttons. This is the Say What Show. It is June 8th, 2019. With me is not Dolly Howard. She's not feeling up to the show today, but we've got Ani Avedisian with us. And Ani, you're here, right? Yes, hello.
I am here, live, present, awake, aware, and fully dressed.
Okay, well, that's not required, but the rest of it is. So, what are we going to talk about?
Well, we can talk about a whole variety of things. I don't know if it's appropriate on this show, but I wanted to mention a couple of things that happened to me when I got that copper spiral that you sent me.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. What she's talking about is the Shanghai Spirit Spiral that we've had for, right from the beginning almost, that Walt Silva had created. And it's actually the wiring in it, the copper wire that makes the spiral, and you've probably seen them if you've listened to us before, that is cut in the frequency of shungite. I don't know that we told you that in the paper that was with it, but it's actually cut into the frequency of shungite. So it's not only fueled by shungite, but the frequency that it's emitting is a torsion field of shungite. So yes, I found one of these things. It sort of just appeared, and I went, wow. And as soon as I saw it, I thought of you. So that's why I asked you if you would like it.
Well, I'm glad you did, and I read your instructions because I'm a little Virgo. I do read instructions. So I like to see, you know, what to do. And I thought they were quite well written. And so I put aside some time for it, you know, energetically cleansed it and did all my usual shaman stuff for it. And I set it to the Schumann resonance, and that was lovely, and I really felt it. Then I thought that I would meditate with it and set it to pulse to optimum physical health template, female human, because, you know, that's what I am as far as I know. And so I went down for a meditation with it. And started to do, I felt the pulse. It really does open up with your heart chakra. It's not just a piece of wire. There's really something quite profound to it. And as I started my meditation, as I normally do, going through the different parts of my body and attuning them to their correct calibrations, I guess I fell asleep. And 6 hours later, I woke up with this thing still on my solar plexus belly, you know, and I'm still in my meditation. So I wake up 6 hours later, and at the foot of my bed is a younger, slimmer, healthier version of me looking down at me, pointing and giggling at me. And I remember that actual outfit that I wore 30 some years ago. And I thought, this is an interesting vision. And then I realized, I don't know that it is a vision. It was some sort of time-space warp thing. I thought, okay, that's interesting. So, you know, I greeted myself, as it were, and then reset the resonance back to Schumann pulse mode, got on with my day. And then in the evening, before I went to bed, I put the spiral in the living room, asked it to continue in pulse mode, Schumann resonance. And I was awakened around about 2 a.m. or so to these really strange lights that were in my living room. Now, let me say, first of all, don't think that everyone's going to have a strange experience with this thing. This is my world, paranormal anomalies, and I've been trained for this for years. So I vibrate to certain frequencies and I'm comfortable with them. So I go into the living room and there are these bright teal lights shooting out all over the place. And I see some of my guides and some other people very curiously looking down at this spiral and investigating it. So I stood there and watched them for a while, and no one seemed to pay any attention to me. So I just went back to bed. And that was the first, you know, that was the first 24 hours of working with it. And in between, I've used it every day for my physical, optimal physical health template meditations. And I feel it almost reaching out to the parts of my body that need the help. So it's working rather like these pulse mode frequency emitters that acupuncturists and chiropractors have in their office that's supposed to just, you know, find which part of you is deficient and feed it. So I was very interested in that. Also, when I put it in my bedroom and sleep at night, I really find that my normal sleep pattern changes and I'm traveling a lot more out of body. So that's as far as I've got with it, but it's very, very interesting little device for what it's doing. I don't know what other people's experiences are with it, but in the short space of time that I've had it, it's quite fascinating and I'm keeping a log.
Another log? Journal?
Yes, I keep log. A log. A journal. I call them a jog, a journal log.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm keeping a log specifically for this one. I'm keeping another log for how I'm using shungite in energy work and, home and property clearings. Because I like to log things. You know, I'm very methodical in that sort of thing. I don't just go with something. I have to see what the difference is and how my clients' reporting change. I have to say, I was knocked out by the spiral and what's been happening with it. Interesting.
Well, the spirit spiral, we stopped offering it in the store because it was so difficult to explain how to use it. And you have to be ready for it. It's something that is very specific to the needs of the person. And it doesn't have to do with anything except are you at a level that you can actually work with this device? Because all of these devices are like training wheels on a bicycle for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I told Walt, I said, Walt, you take over this. You know, if people, so anybody that wants to have a spirit spiral, you've got to go to Walt directly. And that's at New Paradigm Tools. plural.com, newparadigmtools.com, Walt Silva. So it really is a journey that will be unique to you. Everybody's journey is unique. But also, have you in any way, shape, or form felt the sentience that's behind this?
Well, it's when you're with this, there's the best way that I can explain it. There's almost a series of grids that I can see that they're not solid, it's not anything you have to negotiate. The best way I can explain it is it's trying to show you or trying to show me what field it's a part of and how it explains that to me depends on my level of awareness. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I'm not sure it makes sense to a lot of people, though.
Okay.
Because the people that I find that are working with shungite and taking it to new levels, their very nature is multidimensional. They're thinking mm-hmm. on different layers. And so a lot of times, all of us will get just this immediate intuition and do something. We can't explain why we did it. We just knew to do it. And that is a level of energy that you have to kind of go to be able to work with these, I don't want to say higher, well, they're higher dimensional, but they're also lower dimensional. They're very, very interesting in that they're very, very multidimensional devices. So you are, if you work with them, you're going to have an experience of maybe being at a different, not so much a level, but texture of a particular frequency, a particular energy field. Well, somebody else might be in a different energy field. So that's might be why you're seeing the layering. Could that?
I like the word. Yeah, I like the word texture.
Yeah,
actually, that resonates because in my normal state, when I'm doing my work in deep trance or otherwise, you know, we see things we can't possibly translate into human vocabulary, and that happens with or without anything around you. But that generally happens when I'm really in deep trance. With the spiral, it happens when I'm fully conscious. And when I've been using the shungite itself to start to grid properties, because a huge part of my work, Nancy, is working on property, working on location. And when I've been gridding the shungite and then illuminating the property afterwards, again, these layers that I would normally never see outside of being in some sort of trance, worked what I call my everyday work trance. I'm still cognizant. I mean, I'm not going to walk into walls or anything. But what I, in my fully conscious state, when I'm talking to another human about, oh, let's have a cup of coffee, once a place is gridded and it's attuned to that shungite, in my conscious state, I'm beginning to see these textures that I would normally only see if I took a few breaths and, you know, got into my shaman space. So I'm finding this all very, very fascinating. And I want to introduce these products to the small handful of friends that I have that are experienced and competent energy workers, because I think it would greatly, greatly enhance their cosmology, for want of a better word.
Well, because I had him make something that was attuned to not shungite, but turpentine.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
Pine pitch, because it is like a universal healer.
Okay.
And that we do sell in the store. And the reason that I feel comfortable with that is because this has been designed, well, let me put it to you this way. Whereas shungite is already in a more etheric energy field than pine pitch is. Pine pitch sort of has a little more grounding to it. So mm-hmm. by putting it into the turpentine spiral, there evolves the ability to, okay, when you're dealing with a spiral that is based on the spirit shungite spiral, when you're dealing with that one, you're dealing in symbology. Whereas when you're dealing with the turpentine one, you can deal with language.
That might be a little bit easier for people to handle. I totally see that. Yeah.
You know, so to me, it is just, it's friendly. It's loving. It can be just a real sense of security because mm-hmm. it works so fast. You know, I can't mm-hmm. tell you how many times I've had this, that, or the other thing and said, oh, terp, please. I call it terp. It's terp, please, you know. And you can immediately feel whatever the issue is go away. And terp will also work on my other animals. Of my other animals, yeah. The family, the whole family. And he will do other work for you. But it's just, it's much more grounded energy. So I feel comfortable that people working with the turpentine spiral will see really a feeling of communication. And Dolly, we sent one to Dolly, and she calls her Mr. Spiral.
Okay.
And they have a lot of talks.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start suggesting then the turpentine one. for some of my mates to start off with.
I think it's a little safer.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, not everybody has had the backgrounds that we have and works with this day in, day out. But yeah, I'm wowed. I love it. It's my new friend. I might give it a name too.
Have you noticed that, have you tried to turn it on and off and seen the change in the temperature?
Absolutely. Yeah. It does get cold.
Yeah.
It can get cold.
Well,
yeah.
He measured it. When we first started out, he was taking all sorts of measurements on these things, and it's like a whole Celsius degree.
Yep.
So it's perceivably colder.
Yes, it is. It is. So it's right here next to me now. So I want to give it an inventive name, but it'll have to tell me what it wants to be named. So we'll go from there. But yeah, cheers for that. This has been, you know, really fascinating. I'm really enjoying journeying with it.
Did you get the package of Shungite nuggets?
The smaller nuggets? No, not yet. But someone actually gave me a whole bunch too.
I better look into that, because that was sent to you right after that last show.
Oh, okay. No, I
no. You, no, I take that back. You came and asked me about it, and so I'll check with them and find out where it is.
Oh, cheers, Nancy. Thanks.
Yeah.
Because this is definitely going forward. Something I'm working with. It's made a huge difference to my gridding. So.
Can you go into that at all? What the Shungite and the grid happens? Because we got a lot of people doing gridding. I think I've told you that they send us pictures to the Facebook group Shungite Reality, and they'll put pictures in it, and they've gone around. They've done banks. They've done, of course, rivers and natural places, but they'll also go after government houses.
Yes, no, and I'm a member of that group. So
I
check in a couple of times a day, and there's everything there from people who really understand what they're doing to people who are a little bit in awe and confused about it. But I first of all, I've got to say hoorah to all of these people that are going out of their way with bags of Shungite in their pockets and in the backs of their cars and just throwing it all over the place, and also being very conscious about where they want to place it. So every time we place something, it's part of the greater grid, and that's cool. I get that. But my job mainly is to go in and spiritually clear people's properties, and that can be anything from a condo to a residence to huge farms. I do a lot of marijuana farms. This is Oregon. It's all legal and good out here. And people want their property. Well, they want their property protected. I don't use that word because I try to stay away from anything that implies threat perception, because that's the problem we have in our world today. So I prefer to use, the word illuminated. So I illuminate someone's property to vibrate above the disease and dysfunction of the world around them, rather than put up a shield, because that just is a very short-term thing and doesn't work.
Oh, I like that. That's a very good perspective. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's the old Armenian shaman thing. So vibrate above the disease and dysfunction of the world and make the outermost layers of your energy field champagne bubbles. And who doesn't like champagne? I love champagne. So that it's permeable. And if anybody walks into your space that has less than Christ-like intentions, they'll either be confused and repelled by the light, or they'll just be immersed in the light and just, you know, neutral. You know, that from threat to neutrality is a good step. But it's all about illumination. So when I look at a property, there's millions of ways to grid properties, millions of crystals, millions of patterns, millions of mathematical equations, too much to go into, and everybody has their own opinion on how to do it. I generally start by gridding the outermost parts of a property with north, south, east, and west grids of crystals that will all talk to each other and form a cohesive field. And then if other little grids need to be made inside the properties, then we will go ahead and do that. But what I have found with the Shungite is when you place it, and I'm using medium to large chunks at the moment, and I'm using a lot of smaller chunks too, but for the larger properties, which are my specialty, I'm using the medium to larger chunks. And if you put those in groups of three, as we've discussed, they do talk to each other. And so I like the traditional north, true with a compass. Learn how to use a compass, people. A true north, south, east, and west grid. So I'll typically place, once I've cleansed, purified, vitalized, and stabilized a property, I'll typically place my shungites three north, south, east, and west. And I found once I've got the triangle in, you know, three shungite talk to each other lovely. You put another set in, they talk to each other. You put another set in, they talk to each other. And you could actually go with that. But then when you put another set of three in, you've got this beautiful field. And it's not like anything I've seen before. It's not an illumination of a magnanimous proportions. It's just a change in frequency. It's almost as if the land goes, ah, rather than, woohoo, we're illuminated, baby, you know. This is a lovely change of frequency, and I feel it's stabilizing. Somehow it has a stabilizing effect. And then, you know, I do whatever else I need to do. I found tremendous use with putting little groups of three shungite near EMF. I've used all your stickers as well. But I found a tremendous difference in, for example, people are reporting less headaches when they put three shungites next to their router or three shungites next to their PCs. So I've been encouraging people to get more shungite and put it in their homes. And the results have been very good. In my home, I have no headaches from using the computer now and less eye strain, which is amazing because I think eyes aren't about EMF so much as they are what you're doing with the rods of your eyes. And the air is crisper and cleaner and more relaxed with the shungite in it. So that's my basic grid, is my north, south, east, and west grid. And there's a lot more I can do, and it depends on the property, what type of geopathic stress is on the property, what happened on the property. But the very least anyone needs to know is how to do a basic four-point grid. And using three pieces of shungite for each of those points works really well.
We've actually discovered, well, first off, there has been Curlian photography taken. They weren't looking for it. I don't think that they understood what they captured. But there were, happened to be three pieces of shungite there. And there was a number of pictures taken, and you could see the individual field of the, whatever piece of shungite it was. But then when there was these three, all of a sudden they connected. Mm-hmm. There was a secondary field that connected the three pieces. And it's coherency within the field that stabilizes everything. Well, recently we started getting the push to do six and then nine. Because, well, Tesla said if you can understand three, six, and nine, you'll understand the universe, you know?
Right.
We don't exactly understand three, six, and nine, but we can see a perceivable difference in what happens because you've got the individual fields, and now you got the three fields, and the three fields will connect with a six and a nine field. So when you get this thing up there, it's like that's causing a higher vibrational pattern to start. It's like now you got torsion fields within torsion fields.
So what you're saying is that rather than do a group, four groups of three, you've been doing groups of sort of four groups of six and nine, six or nine?
We've been doing three groups of threes.
Okay. Okay, well, three groups of threes works well.
Yeah, I'll be interested.
All I've been doing is adding another group of three.
Yes, you've gotten to the six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that has such the vibration in the land is relief and stabilization.
Yes, because you're locking it. Each of the shungite nuggets themselves is connected to the quantum field.
Right.
And so when you get the three together, now the secondary field is a coherent, it's not so much dependent on the 0 points anymore in the independent nuggets. It's creating a 0 point of three connecting lines. So mm-hmm. now the field is shifted from, it's sort of like now it's interior. I'm just getting picture after picture in my head.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do understand it because I work in the field. I understand it. But I'm going to work with it a little bit more. I've had the opportunity to do quite a few of these. And I go back and I take a look at the properties whenever I can. If I can't, I'll tune in remotely. But I want to make a video on it. You know, probably towards sometime in the fall when I start to make instructional videos on various types of energy healing. I want to devote one of those instructionals to how I'm using shungite in property work. And I'm very interested to have input from other people who do this work and how they're using it. You know, if it's not proprietary information to anybody out there, I'm happy to share how I do it.
There is nothing proprietary about shungite. It's a gift from Gaia.
You know,
anybody that actually tries to hide this, because, all right, we got a lot of people, I won't say a lot, I'll say there are certain people that have certain devices that are doing certain things. And the only way they can be doing those things, if they're doing those things, is with shungite.
Right.
You
know? So I think my point was more that there's a certain thing with certain energy workers that they, you know, they don't want to share how they do things or whatever, and that's all BS as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's dangerous.
Yeah,
because you know, if you don't share, we're not going to know. And
right.
You know, we have been giving away every single secret. Okay, we've kept a couple. All right. Mm. But they're not critical to doing any of the energy work. It's not something that is going to teach anybody anything. It's just something that, you know, and I'm honest about it. We need to stay in business. If we teach you all how to fish and then you go take all the fish out of the water, well, you know, we can't get to the next stage because we are a repository of knowledge, in my opinion. That's my job. You know,
right? Yeah, so. And then just having the knowledge just isn't enough. You know, there's so much to it. But I'm happy to, if any energy workers out there, I'm located in Pacific Northwest, but you know, it's a small world these days. I'm happy to share knowledge of how I do things, and I'm interested to hear how you do things, because we're at a critical stage in our evolution here, one way or the other. People are waking up, so let's get out there and let's share it all, because it's magnificent. Clearly, I'm not going to, you know, there are a couple of tricks I have up my sleeve too that I'm not going to share with people who don't do this for a living at the level that I do it. But other than that, hey, call out to all shamans or whatever you call yourselves who are working with shungite. Give us a call. Let's all have a group Skype. Let's share. I'm all about that.
I think of us as Gaia's groupies.
Ooh, I like that. Ooh, I'm writing that down because I might forget. Wait.
Gaia's groupies. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Actually started up a Facebook group. Yeah. But I didn't have the time to pursue that particular one. Still up.
Oh, for Gaia's groupies?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, you have to kind of pick and choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
there's my shungite stories for this month. I'll have other ones for next month, a whole new other properties and other things to deal with. I'm also spending a lot of time in hospitals as part of my job. I want to see what I can do. People are always asking me for talismans and, you know, that sort of thing. So interested to see if anyone uses shungite in hospitals, and I'll be happy to share what I'm doing too with that. So yeah, let's all share. All right, that's my shungite story for the month, Nancy. What else should we talk about?
Well, I love your shungite stories because I trust I trust what you're seeing and who you are. And it's always nice to get confirmation. That's part of it, you know, because when we started out, we just told everybody what we were doing, and, you know, then we'd test within our friends and family certain products, and then we'd say, okay, this is, you know, out there, try it, tell us what, you know. And in some cases, we pulled the things down, you know, because of things that were happening, like, for instance, the spirit one. You know, but we also know that the products that we have up there are true and tested by peers. Us.
Yes.
We're the peers in this case. Peer tested. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you like to talk about? Because you have, you just have so many things to talk about on your YouTubes. And if anybody doesn't know, there'll be links below us, but Ani has a wonderful selection of cosmic information. What do we call it? What do you call them? Cosmic.
I call them cosmic quickies.
Quickies. I wanted to call them quips, but they're quickies. That's right.
Cosmic quickies. Yeah. You know, I would. What I'm seeing on a day-to-day basis these days, and I'm a working spiritual counselor with a. Who specializes in paranormal anomalies and blah, blah, blah. And the world has changed so much in terms of the levels of awareness around us in the last just 6 months or so. And I'm in awe of all of my clients and all of the people who come to my classes and my events who a year or so ago were on the fence about everything. And now they're showing up at city council meetings and going on about 5G and, you know, so I've just got to say shout out to everybody for in all of this confusion and these extremes in polarity and crazy contrast that's out there, that you've managed to sort of maintain some focus and discern what's important. What I like to say is what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. And people are beginning to prioritize and think about what matters for the world, because I think we've realized that there are certain possibilities in play in the field of potential that some might call an end of days scenario. And resistance, as much as I hate that word, is the awakening and the backlash to some of these things that are grassroots level excites me tremendously. And rather than people come into my office on a daily basis and moan about how dreadful their lives are and how much their husband hates them and all of that, those conversations exist a little bit, but it's really changed to I've started a book club and we're all discussing 5G, or I've started a book club and we're all talking about how to overcome self-sabotage. I've started a book club or a ladies club, and we are now talking about how to dissolve the Republican and the Democratic parties and make an America party. You know, so I'm so profoundly encouraged that people are reaching whatever their percentage of critical mass is, and it doesn't have to be a large percentage. It just has to be the right intent at the right time. So to all those people out there who know that something's not right, because you're educated, you're articulate, you're alert, you know that something's not right, but you've been trained for generations to feel disempowered, that, you know, that relentless campaign of perceptual engineering by the cabal, the establishment, whatever we're calling deep state these days. It's in your DNA. It's in your RNA, the fact that everything's hopeless. That seems to be changing now. So all of you who think that something is wrong, but you don't quite think you can do anything about it, just remember the American Revolution. A handful of men, a few Pennsylvania rifles, the Culpeper spy gang, and a few other people, somehow or another, with all the ineptitude and no one writes, you know, how to do a revolution handbook, you manage to throw out the British, which were the most organized peeps in the world at that time, and turn America into what it was supposed to be, which now, of course, it isn't, but we will get back to that. So don't feel that a group of women in a back room discussing why there's a 5G tower down the road from them, or what is the field of resistance that we call self-sabotage, or any of these things that will empower you individually, for the betterment of mankind isn't going to make a difference. Because usually it really is true that a small group of people in a room somewhere start that spark. And that sometimes is the only thing that makes a difference. So let the founding fathers be your guiding light, all you ladies in back rooms of altar guilds or librarian clubs or your, you know, senior citizen living homes. If you've woken up to something, you don't have to preach, you don't have to scream, that never works. But if you want to have conversation and respectful discourse with people and go, hey, hello, Mavis, have you heard about this? And da-da-da. That seems to be a trend now. That seems to be a thing. I have, I'd love to have more young people to mentor, but I seem to have a lot of groups of 55 plus, 65 plus, 70s plus coming together and saying, we are the elders and we've kind of forgotten that because we had a hard life and now we're trying to retire in peace. But all this stuff is happening and we have maturity and we want to hold space for the younger generation to make sense of it. So I'm delighted. And if you're one of those people that's on the fence, there is something you can do. Just educate yourself. Take a deep breath. When you're done with the outrage of what's going on around you, calm down and remember that it's all a hologram. And this is a story that we all co-wrote together. And we can turn the chapter and write a different story. I think one of the things that Nancy said, why are we here, et cetera, and there's a million and one ways you can talk about that. But I like Nancy's concise statement of, we're here to learn how to manipulate energy. So we created this planet. We created everything in it. And we are now better than people who are afraid of our own shadows. So personal empowerment, people, a little bit of research every day, a small conversation, respectful discourse, and I'm seeing it shift. For all the doom and gloom, I really do believe we're going to win this one. And, you know, that excites me. It really does, because a couple of years ago, I was pretty much on the fence about which way we're going. But I'm not on the fence anymore. You know, I can see over the fence. So,
you know what I think happened?
Tell me.
I think that the veil of forgetfulness is fading.
Okay.
I think that, okay, 20 years maybe, there was a lot of interest in the very beginning of the metaphysical movement. Not the New Age, the metaphysical. I mean, the New Age was the facade of it. But mm-hmm. the metaphysical movement to harken back to the time of Atlantis. And even Edgar Casey said that, a lot of people that are alive in the 20th century are connected to Atlantis. So for a long time, there was always that connection to Atlantis. But recently, with all that's happening to us, particularly being propelled by the focus on the 5G, thank God, to me it's a gift. I've been yelling for, you know, decades, many decades about all of it, including the 3G, 2G, 4G, you know. And nobody would listen to myself and many others. But the 5G is, now they're talking 4G. Yes, 4G was just killing you slower. But Shanghai can fix that. 5G is a whole different story. But what I found very interesting is this in this last week, and I know it was the D-Day ceremonies, but there was something very different. It was different energetically. It was, I kept getting flashbacks of just past lives, you know, that time frame, World War II. And I firmly believe that George Patton was a past life, time of mine is the way you would think about it. So,
okay.
And then I'm on Radio 5G, and my co-host there starts talking about Patton. And he knows my history with him. And so mm-hmm. we had an honest discussion of Patton at the end of World War II. Because at the end of World War II, Patton had a mystical confrontation with the Spear of Destiny, that's a story in and of itself. He himself was a very highly experienced metaphysician. Mm-hmm. But what had happened is that he went to one of the concentration camps, and he went through an incredible transformation spiritually. One guy said he'd never seen anybody as angry, and it was reported that he physically got sick. He was there with Eisenhower and Bradley and, you know, other dignitaries, but it was, you know, and I know of that because one of the reasons I believe he's a past lifetime is that I keep having, like, memories, like I'm experiencing it, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the insight that I have into the man, it comes from that. Not so much that, you know, I've studied him, per se. I know quite a bit about him, but I didn't read his book. I have it, but I never felt the need to read it or anything. But, so it was interesting to me that Michael had brought it up, and then, boom, the next day, because of that show, somebody gives me a link to something on Patton, and so then I spent 2 hours watching Patton that I'd never done in my life. I mean, I didn't realize that the man had a very squeaky voice, you know? Almost almost feminine, because we think of George C., right, Scott? And the Patton he produced, you know? And, of course, you know, he would have loved to have had my voice, you know? And the thing of it is that at the end of the war, George realized that they had won the battle, but they had not won the war, that there was a terrible, really kind of evil thing that he was only beginning to perceive. And it really did come down to his interaction with German people who had unleashed this monstrosity of the concentration camps, never mind the war itself. And yet they were being treated inhumane by his own people. And so he began to talk about a lot of things that he shouldn't have talked about, and he was assassinated. It was almost botched, but then they went in and took care of it. But the interesting thing that he said, well, first off, his last thought was, I'm going to remember. Let me remember. And, you know, that's why I come out and I remember all my past lifetimes, you know, because he said, right. I'm going to remember. Okay, so, but supposedly what he said to his wife, Beatrice, his last words were, it's too dark. And when I heard that, I actually capitalized the D in my when I heard it. And then he said, I mean, it's too late. And it was very strange because when I think it was a video. I think they just said that. But for some reason, when I heard what he had said, it kind of unlocked something in me, like a memory. Like there was like the veil of the memory started coming down. And then that night, yeah, I think it was maybe the next night, the next day. I ended up, and I never do this. I mean, this is so not like me. But I ended up watching videos on, you know, they were doing stuff about D-Day and the end of World War II and all of this. And there was a whole series of these things about the end of the war and what Patton was seeing. And it was unbelievably atrocious. I mean, we think of D-Day as being for most people, well, that was the end of the war. They just ran, you know, no. The next few months was the most horrific experience that human beings have ever encountered. I mean, so bad that I'm going like, I'm actually seeing films that I saw many, you know, when I was a kid or something, where they would take out all the dead bodies, and no, all the dead bodies was there. They didn't hold back anything in these films. They were making warnings every commercial, you know, about the graphic. And I've never seen this on television. Maybe I was the only one that was going to see it. I don't know. But it makes me more aware of the fact that, yes, the Nazis in the fascist, this way of thinking was only a part of what was happening to humanity all over the world. It was insanity. Mm-hmm. I mean, true insanity. Mm-hmm. And we are on the brink of the same thing again.
Yep.
And I think what all the message to me was through all this is remember. Remember.
Yeah.
And why is it that it's the 70-year-olds, the 60, you know, to 80 year, why are they the ones that are waking up? Because that was where we were brought up as children. We didn't know about the death camps. All we knew, we were a magnificent country that fought back the evil Germans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, but we were so proud. We were so proud of our parents. We were so proud of the fact that we obviously were being backed by God. And then, to get to this point and look and go, my God, you know, what happened? Now we're the Germans.
Yep. Yep. It,
you know, but you can't, how can you get to that enlightenment, you know, if you haven't lived it? So most of the population isn't old enough to remember. And they're not taught. They're not taught civics.
No, they're not taught how to balance their bloody checkbooks. I mean, no, they're not taught civics. They don't, and that, of course, that's by design. Because you can't really challenge a government if you don't know how it works. Yeah, that was a fascinating story, by the way. And it really does make sense to me now why all these 70-plus, 80-year-olds are forming these groups, these formidable American grandmothers, you know?
They remember. They still remember.
Because, I mean, these women are really something, and they've got a little bee in their bonnet now. So these Peruvian shaman grandmothers and everybody, you got nothing on the American grandmothers that are waking up. Yeah, they're saying things that they're using language, Nancy, they wouldn't normally use. Like, you know, I'm going to hold space for the next generation. And yes.
Well, because I think because what I find so interesting about it is that it as you get older, your perception of living and dying changes drastically. The things that were important when you were younger are no longer important. And the things that you kind of like forgot about become much more critical to the final legacy you're going to leave.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's part and parcel of it. And it's a really interesting time we live in, which is also a Chinese curse, by the way.
Yeah, it is a Chinese case. But I have to say, I've had a second awakening myself. You know, for a long time, I feel the same way as you have felt, a lone voice crying in the wilderness, you know, trying to tell people about how the world is run and that there is a nefarious agenda and there is something. Don't use your credit cards and, you know, all the stuff that you and I know that we talk about that we take for granted. I've been shouting about this for a very, very long time. Then I stopped shouting and I started talking. I started conversing. I started teaching. I started facilitating groups. And I think I have to be honest and say, I can't say I haven't made a difference. Each of us make a difference every day just by getting up, thanking God and going, okay, what can we do together today, Lord, you know? But a couple of years ago, I do remember looking at my partner and going, do you think we should just retire and buy a cottage in Cornwall and sit at the back of the pub and drink Guinness and just stare at people all day long? I mean, what, or should we just carry on with this? Is anybody ever going to listen to us? And I have to say, it's shifted. It is absolutely shifted. So very glad we all hung in there for this. And it's also given us a time to sort of to chill, become more articulate, grow in maturity, and find better ways of reaching people at all levels of awareness without having to hit people over the head.
Well, we've learned not to take it very seriously.
Yeah, I think Yeah, you know? People think there's always going to be a 7-Eleven, right? There's always going to be a Safeway. It's always going to be a strip mall down the road.
No, but what I mean is yeah. is that we know it's terrible. We also know we're going to win because yeah. we can't conceive of not winning.
I agree with that.
You know, so yeah. anything that's happening is happening to write a story. We're just telling stories. And so it's sort of like, what story are you going to, you know, follow? You want one that has you fighting in the streets and repeating World War One and World War Two and Vietnam and all the other crazy things? You want that story? My God, we've done that enough and it always ends up the same. Insanity. Do you want that? Yeah. Or do you want to come over here where we say we are a family of man? And not only that, we're a family of life. And we come together and create a new reality. And that's what I try to focus in on. We've already got the new reality. How do we get there? Well, let's get them so nervous about the fact we're waking up that they put all this 5G stuff out there. And everybody wakes up and sees the 5G. And so now it becomes a focal point, a rallying point. How dare you? You know, and as when you begin to encounter the same inconceivable evil that you saw when you were somebody else in World War II, the space between the experience, the life experiences, is now not so very far.
Yeah,
you know, and so you start yeah. you start to be led into watching certain things. Yeah. You know, you'll be led into meeting certain people that understand the depth of that depravity, the older yeah. people, because they're going to get more vocal.
Yeah. The weapons have changed, but the agenda is still the same. And if it took this to get everybody to get up and pay attention, then that's what it took. So, you know, hoorah for all of us who are hanging in there and who are speaking out and educating and remaining calm and sane throughout it. Because, you know, to kill another manifestation of the divine simply is a psychotic experience. It just doesn't make any sense on any level. We've normalized it with selective morality. You put on a uniform and kill someone, possibly you might get a medal. If you're shown to be a coward up until recent time, you were shot for not killing somebody. And yet, if you're a civilian, you go to prison for shooting somebody. Selective morality hiding under the thin veneer of civilization. And finally, we are waking up and seeing through that veneer, seeing through that illusion. And it's just an exciting and beautiful thing. I haven't been this excited since my first date.
You know, it's like when you look at it, it's so stupid. You can't conceive of the fact that we've actually fallen for it.
Yeah. Hello.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm embarrassed by myself because I'm not, you know, I believed a lot of this stuff, you know, and then one by one you go, and that's not true either. Oh my heavenly day, you know, and that not, oh my goodness, you know, and pretty soon it's like you expect it to change, but then even when it changes, you're still surprised because it's so stupid.
Yes, it's crazy. I know. I look back on my life, and I think I was 16 or 17 years old when I was approached in boarding school by people who said, "Look, young lady, you have this skill set, and wouldn't you like to put it at the service of your country?" And I thought, "Yeah, of course. Where else would I put it? Yeah, we drank the Kool-Aid the same as anybody else for all of our training in whatever it is we were trained in. So, but hey." You know what? You've got to have something to awaken from. And I think that if I hadn't gone through what I went through, well, I would just be another little energy worker running around putting hands on people. I've worked for the people that run this world or for establishments that clearly supported the people that run this world. And so I know beyond a shadow of a doubt how easy it is to be indoctrinated. And till my last dying breath, I'm going to be teaching people how to see through that and how to reclaim their minds and open their hearts. Open mind, open heart. Oh, such treasures, you know?
Yes. It's It's interesting. We sort of started late. We can take a break because it's at the top of the hour, or mm-hmm. we can wait another 6 minutes and go overtime.
Well, why don't we take a break? Is that okay with you?
That's fine with me. I'll see you in about 4 minutes.
I'll be back.
Okay.
I saw you standing in the middle of the thunder and lightning. I know you're feeling like you just can't win, but you're trying. It's hard to keep on keeping on when you're being pushed around. Don't even know which way is up. You just keep spinning down, round, down. Every storm runs out of rain, just like every dark night turns into day. Every heartache will fade away, just like every storm runs out of rain. Tell yourself that there's something more, and walk out that door. Go find a new rose. Don't be afraid of the thorns, 'cause we all have thorns. Just put your feet up to the edge, put your face in the wind. And when you fall back down, keep on remembering. Set you free.
And welcome back to the Say What Show. My name's Nancy Hopkins. With me is Annie Avedisian, and we have been without Dolly Howard tonight, but we seem to be carrying on okay. Are you back, Annie?
I'm back.
Awesome. I want to ask you a question. How did they know when you were a school kid that you had, let's say, certain aptitudes?
Well, I would say there's twofold on that for the stuff that I can talk about. First off, I didn't realize until much later that the bed and breakfast hotel that my father ran in central London was actually a safe house for military intelligence. So that could have been part of it. Nancy, are you still there? My computer's doing funny things.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay, all right. So it's not you, it's just my computer. Yeah. So that was a part of it. And then I think there was just a couple of tests that I was asked to take, which were sort of aptitude tests or were marketed as such. And I think later on in life I learned that they tagged me as some sort of high-functioning sociopath, which I'm not. I did grow up with Asperger's and autism. But I'm certainly not a sociopath. I have empathy. So I think something to do with with the whole safe house.
Well, maybe they wanted sociopaths. Maybe that's what they were looking for.
I think they were excited that I tested as a high functioning sociopath, because that's exactly who you want working for you if you're working, you know, for the dark with a D. I would just say I am not a sociopath. Clearly I am not. But in those days, even though Asperger's has been, has been around for a while, the boarding school I went to, it just wasn't in anyone's frame of reference. They just thought you were strange, eccentric, and highly focused. I'm a very highly focused individual on my work. And clearly my father, God rest his soul, was a strange being. But he had government ties. There's clearly no doubt about it. I didn't know about this till later. So there we are. He obviously did a lot of work for the government too. And it's not as if I was, it's not 007 stuff. I mean, you were actually in uniform, weren't you, Nancy? I mean, you were an intelligence officer.
Yes, yes, uniform.
Yeah. I worked more behind the scenes, helping operatives to develop certain skill sets. So that's how I got into it. And at that time, I was very proud to serve my country. So
how did you get out of it?
I'm not actually sure that I can talk about that. I think I was pushed out. is the safest thing that I can say. So there comes a time where you do awaken. And it's interesting, it's probably a different, slightly different perspective in uniform. But when you work, it's a bit like being a butler or a maid in someone's house, some rich person's house. You're staff and you don't exist. You serve a function. And because you're staff, everybody assumes that whatever is heard stays there. Or there's this craziness that used to be amongst the British that no longer exists because we have all grown up now. But there was this whole thing in the early days of intelligence with the British that, oh, he's from Eton, he's okay. He's from a good school, he's one of us, There's a tremendous amount of naivety, I think. And you hear things over and over again over a course of many, many years. And no one thinks that you're going to have a problem with it because for some reason you went to the right school, were connected with the right people, and the right people vouched for you, and that you would never have a personal awakening. But of course, that's not what happened for me after a while. Once I figured out exactly how the world worked, I had my own version of a psychotic break, which wasn't a psychotic break. It was just an inner collapse and a reawakening and a rebuilding. And I guess in my younger years, I was quite naive. I thought that, that people would believe me for whatever I said. It turned out that wasn't the case. And I'm actually very happy to be alive and safe and, living here. But you don't really get out of that sort of thing. You either die, which clearly I didn't, or you are graciously moved to a safe place, however you want to put it. Yeah. And ultimately, of course, I'm nobody of any great importance. I was just another cog in the wheel, teaching people intuitive skill sets, teaching people, remote viewing, teaching people clairvoyance, how to develop clairvoyance, clairsentience, how to be still, how to reclaim their minds, how to have instant recall. Just, you know, your usual skill set for nobody important, otherwise I wouldn't be here, would I? Just another cog in the wheel. But I learnt a lot, a great deal, and it disturbed me sufficiently. And then I spent the other 30 years being sufficiently disturbed that nobody believed me.
Well, you know, I had sort of the opposite exposure, because I already was way deep in the rabbit hole, and I ended up in the Army. But I went into the Army to spy on the Army, because I realized that I'd gotten to an impasse and that I was not going to be able to understand the full implications of this. I started out with John Kennedy, and it focused on the oil magnates of the Texas, you know, oil conglomerate, as being the, you know, probable planners of the assassin. But it then started to morph into other things. But you didn't know what those other things were, because I didn't have a position to be able to see it. So I go into the military and honestly said, no, I'm going to do, because I had a choice of not doing it. And I said, no, I'm going to do this, because it's the only way to understand your enemy is to join them.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is what I did. And then the universe took off and took me to the highest echelons of the not only the military, but the intelligence community per se. It was like a rocket ship taking off. And it was, and that had been prepared for many years, because they had made me a Russian specialist out of college. And then when I got to the point that that would become important was because they were pulling out of Vietnam and nobody had been paying attention to the Russians. So they had a dearth of any kind of people that understood anything about the Soviet Union and Warsaw Pacts. So, you know, and then because I got to the highest echelons and I had control over a lot of information that nobody else would have gotten, I discovered how bad it really was. And you know, I've talked about it many times. And at that point, I realized I had to get the hell out of there. And the only reason I got out was I blackmailed a colonel in the Army to sign the papers, and I was out as a civilian before they found out, because they're so big. It's like everybody wants to be afraid of the cabal, but in my mind, they're like really big, overweight people that can't run and hardly are able to breathe.
And interesting. I have a slightly different perspective of them, but I get your point. So you blackmailed someone and got out. Very clever. Before they knew you were gone.
Yeah, well, then I made promises that I would... I had job offers in the think tanks. And I actually asked this one guy, a colonel, that was kind of pissed at me, and I said, look, at how far ahead am I than you guys with the tactics and everything else? And he says, oh, no, maybe 2 years. I said, I'll be back in a year and a half.
Oh.
And I said, I'll join. I can't even remember which. It was a sweet job they were offering me.
Mm-hmm.
But I got caught in a traffic jam in D.C., and I said, this is not the way to go.
Yeah. Well, quite right.
Yeah, I said, no, this isn't my cup of tea. But I had to get out, because I really thought that there was... There was, again, layers in the stories, you know. But I felt that there was somebody who was probably a Soviet mole that was really high up in the command echelon. And I felt that they were going to find out who I was.
Okay.
And, you know, I said, I don't think I'm going to survive here.
No. So you did the right thing, my gosh.
Yeah, I said, let's just take us an adios out of here.
Yeah, good for you.
And then, you know, it was like I couldn't adjust to civilian life, and I ended up with a guy who was on sabbatical from the remote viewing of the Army. I mean, the way the universe works is just astounding to me. And he ended up telling me about 5G.
Really?
Yes, and this was 1976. Long story is how that story came about, but that's what he told me. So I've known since 76 that this 5G thing was their ultimate end game.
Oh, okay, so you had a lot of time to prepare us.
Well, it did take me by surprise, but I thought mm-hmm. apparently not as surprised as I thought I was, because I actually came across a radio show that I'd done in 2014 on 5G.
You know, the microwave part of that technology has been around for a long time, and they have experimented on people. Oh, yeah. In the UK, I know for a fact, you know. So, yeah. Well, I'm glad we're both out for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But if I'd have stayed a little bit longer, it was obvious I was cracking. If I'd have, you know, stayed in a little bit longer, it probably wouldn't have been a good thing. Once I awoke, and I can't play the game. I can't pretend. I would not make a good operative. You know,
well,
I would not make a good spy.
Just visualize that for all those people that are still in that mindset. It's how do you explain it? It's almost like they're overridden by an artificial. Actually, Walt Silva said to me once, he said, these people are biological AI. You know, that you've got this artificial intelligence that's already operating in your head because of all the way they school you, the way that you're brought up in your society, the music, everything. But on mm-hmm. top of that, they've got this new layer of electromagnetic intrusion. That's coming not only from your phones, but the very electric system that you're involved with. And then on top of that, that stuff fogs your mind, so you don't even know that you're not thinking right.
Right. Yep. It's almost like you don't stand a chance, but you do.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, I mean, the people that are waking up right now, the people that are here, they have such a connection. They understand evil. So, you know, one of the things that was sort of not being said by a number of the people that were actually talking about 5G is how evil it is. And that this is a battle between good and evil. Nobody wanted to go there. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. All of a sudden, I saw this snap. Because I went there. And I got a little bit of flack for it, you know. But mm-hmm. all of a sudden, everybody sort of like realized it. They woke up to it. My God, the only thing you can call it is evil.
Yes.
There's
yes.
no way away from it. You know, why are we afraid of calling it evil?
Well, is evil no longer politically correct then?
I believe that it's not politically correct. That's what I think it is.
Because my little American grandmother clubs, which are sprouting up all over the Pacific Northwest, I think... We all liberated here in the Pacific Northwest when they legalized marijuana or something. I don't know. It's everybody's waking up. But they're talking, they ask me questions like, so this is like Atlantis, isn't it? It's like overloading the crystal again. Is this what's happening? Yeah. Interesting.
Because Casey was right.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's Atlanteans. But in order to get to where we are now, we had to go through the horrors of those wars to be able to perceive the stupidity of it. I mean, it's just so stupid. You're all killing each other. Why? Because some guy with a mustache told you to?
Right. Right. You know? So it's not even what's happening. It's how quickly we fell for it. But then again, you know, they take you and put you into school, and depending on your cultural bias there, you're going to be taught certain things. You put people in seminary when they're 12 years old, they're going to come out believing the story of Jesus was a real thing. Do you think Jesus was real? The story was not. You put anybody in the army at an early age, or the police force at an early age, or anything, anywhere in an early age, there's just the general indoctrination. But then, as you say, there's the other layers that have been planned with the, you know, artificial intelligence, the electromagnetic blocking, the poisoning of the food, poisoning of the water, the poisoning of the air, the general dumbing down of the population, the gradual taking away of your rights, gradually, you know, every single aspect of our practical day-to-day lives is now controlled by whatever you want to call the establishment. And it didn't happen overnight. It happened very sensibly through this relentless campaign of indoctrination and engineering until, you know, everyone's so reliant on the big spoon to feed them now. And all they've really learned is the shape of the spoon. You know, they couldn't really make their own spoon if they tried now. So even though we're at that place, people are, you could be considered dangerous, really could be dangerous. The other thing I just have to say, everyone talks about these young people today as being completely clueless and stuff. They're not. They're not. And I have conversations with a lot of teens. I think we've discussed that I have a ministry inside a computer game. And quite a few of these come to see me IRL in real life, 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old boys and girls, mainly boys. And everyone says they're remote, they're stuck into their pods, their iPods, their whatever, and they don't think about things. When you actually address them as human beings and talk about things that matter with them, their perception will blow you away. As many of them will say, look, what kind of a world are we going to inherit? What have you done for us? You know, you guys have been the ones that have been asleep. And now we eat food out of a box and we can't go to college until we're vaccinated and all of this. We would love to do something about this, but what are we going to do at 15, 16 years old? And they are far more awake than people realize that they are. There is a slight sense of hopelessness with some of them. I mean, they can't vote, they can't do this, they can't do that. But if we can just hold space with them and talk to them as adults, I think you'll find they've got some really good ideas about what we can do to get the world back on track, the world that they're hesitant at this point to inherit. You know? I just want to mention that at every available opportunity. Stop talking down to the teenagers of today. Treat them as adults and you might learn a thing or two about what their disappointments are. And ask them, I'm sorry, you've inherited a whole mess here, but say we all die tomorrow and you're the only ones left. You know, do you have any ideas? Come on, let's work together. So I encourage people to do that. Stop dismissing teenagers. They're people, they have ideas. And I know we could have done a lot better with their education and we can push for that. But the ones I talk to, I'm very impressed with.
You know, I got another theory about this because I've been watching The Dark Side. Tried this and that and that and this and that, and it always blows up in their faces. I think that all of this electronics things are changing the brain of these kids. Now, the black side is trying to think that it's controlling them, but I suspect that it's exercising their minds and their imaginations. And when they get to a point where they are being respected for the not only God-given talents and powers that they have, but because they've been exercising these things for a very long time, and they're given permission to use their imaginations in the real world, get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's going to be the dark bang, all this stuff that they were trained with. Because this is going to be boring to them. That's what they grew up on. It doesn't hold any, you know, lure to them.
Very well put, Nancy. Thank you. Very well put. They can do that stuff standing on their heads. They did it at 11 years old. You know? God, there's kids out there writing code like you wouldn't believe. Make me look like an idiot. Their minds work really, really well.
And fast.
Yes. Computer fast. Well, anything works computer fast compared to mine, but they're able to compartmentalize. When I'm talking to some of these kids, I can see them. It's like in the science fiction movies almost, you know, I can see them take a thought, put it in a post-it pad above their head, and then another one, then another one, then another one, and then merge them, calculate them, and then mix it all up and put it back in their head, and out comes an opinion.
They're having a conversation with you.
Yeah, sitting in my little office, drinking chamomile tea with me, trying to be polite with the older English lady. You know, they're coming up with these amazing things, and you can see their thought processes. And their light bodies are a little bit different too. And I agree that there was this idea that they wanted to get all these computer games. Some of them are very violent, some of them not so much, but they really thought that this would be training people to do nothing but kill. And I've got to tell you, there's always exceptions to everything, but nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah. These kids that I meet that play these games, they don't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah, that was a weird thing because I said, I wanted to find out, okay, it's been, Columbine was the one where, you know, they were playing the games, they become killers, they go out and they kill their schoolmates. And so that was set up the stage with the concept that these video games create killers. And not very long ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I said, I wonder what they've really found out about this. And I kept going deeper and deeper because I couldn't find anybody who had ever found that computer games cause kids to become more violent. And I thought, well, either they're covering this thing up extremely well, or this is real data. So that was when I got the idea that, hey, let's look at these kids a little differently. What's really happening with them? And yeah, I think their minds are being trained.
Mm-hmm. Right. Hey, look, we grew up on things like Tom and Jerry. That was the most violent thing I've ever seen in my life. You don't see kids going out torturing cats and mice, do you? Or all the Roadrunner and all these cartoons that were terribly violent.
Well, did you see Bambi?
Yes, I did see Bambi.
And Old Yeller?
Yes, I saw Old Yeller.
I mean, they tortured us. What in the hell was in their heads?
Yeah, yeah. You know, but hooray to you teenagers out there. You're much better than anyone thinks. I believe in you. Nancy believes in you. And I hope you believe in us and in the future of this planet, because we will do everything we can to support you. But you are going to have to take it from there.
Well, yeah, you know? Because otherwise we'll end up as their grandkids or something. Let's get this together. I don't want to come back to what we've left you, please.
If I have one prayer to myself every day and to the divine, it's when I take my last breath in this mortal coil, please let me have given this life all the meaning that it has for me. Because as much as I've enjoyed the ride, I really wouldn't mind just hanging out in the ether for a very, very long time. And then make my next trip to planet Earth when we're well and truly immersed in some stable version of fourth dimension. Yeah. So, yes, I don't want to come back as their grandkids, or anyone's grandkids for that matter.
Oh, I do, because they'll be living in a really neat place, because that's where they're going to bring us.
I'll come back in the neat place. I'll come back when we're stable in the neat place.
A very neat place.
Yeah. I think for a while, I hope. I mean, it's moot point to say it anyway, because you get on the other side and you sort of forget what it's like to be a human. Because, you know, you're not interacting with your DNA, RNA coding to that extent. But you get there. I would just love to just stay in that place that they call heaven or nirvana and learn some different cosmology. Maybe try a different planet for a while. Come back here when we're a little bit more stable. But till my dying breath, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to get that illumination of awareness going, whether it's, we all do what we can, Nancy. I do videos and I do classes.
My fear is that I fail and I have to come right back in again. And I'm just over this, you know. I mean, Patton thought he had won the war only to find out that no, it was much darker and deeper than he had ever imagined. You know, so then I have to come in and I've got to take up the carrying call. You know, I don't want to come back in another version of us to be able to finish this sucker off. You know,
right.
It's like I'm over it.
Well, if you're you don't have to come back, and if you're over it,
have to come back because you know I took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, domestic and foreign.
All right, so you took that oath, and I took a similar oath, and I broke mine, so, you know.
I haven't.
Yeah.
Nor do I intend to.
Well, I can't swear allegiance to the dark side. That's really all there is to it for me. And I want, I love, I'm sorry I had to leave England. I love Britain and I want to retire there and I hope that I can. But, well, anyway, I don't have to go into details on air and I'm sure you know exactly what I mean, but we don't have to come back. We can be equally useful as spirit guides or something from the other side. But I do take your point in so much as I'm going to do everything I possibly can to honor all of my soul contracts and pre-birth agreements with the divine to do whatever I can here to promote awareness. And in my mind, that overrides any other oath that I took. Because clearly I wasn't in my right mind when I took that oath. So well, and I was far too young.
The thing of it is that if I look at just the reality that it, you know, that's here right now, the Republic has been lost to the corporate takeover. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not a big thing to get the Republic back. But if we can do this here, then it can be done anywhere. And what I see happening is that on a sort of a local level, you know, city by city, town by town, they're taking on 5G. Mm-hmm. And as they do this, they come together as a neighborhood. And so as one 5G system and then the problem behind it, the corporate control over the world, when that's taken down, we will emerge as with an understanding of the collectiveness of humanity with everything else, the family of life. You know, that's the, and if the way to get to that, if the first, you know, stepping stone is to go back to the original Constitution of the United States, putting not just a government together, but putting together a concept of inalienable rights of the people. And
I'm with you there.
One of the main things, and you guys over there in Britain, you have the same kind of a concept within the concept of your common courts.
Yep.
And they're stepping up now. But
yes.
Over here, it's the 10th Amendment to the Bill of Rights. And what that stipulates is that the federal government only has the powers as designated by the Constitution. And nowhere in the Constitution does the federal government can the legislature give the federal government more than those rights. I mean, everybody thinks that's true, but it's not. Okay, so the federal government was limited by the way the Constitution was created. But the founding fathers realized that the government that they were envisioning was dependent upon the good hearts of human beings who were going to be the governors.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to have a fail-safe point, they added the last thing to the Bill of Rights, the 10th Amendment. They've got others after that, but the original 10th Amendment, 10 amendments of the Bill, the establishment of the Bill of Rights came about because the forefathers themselves made these changes. There's been others since then. But that 10th one says that, you know, the federal government is limited by this document. And if the federal government exceeds their powers, then it's up to the people. If the states won't stand up, then it's up to the people to stand up. So it's not just a right, it's a responsibility.
Correct.
You know, and that's what we have to come to, is that, yes, there's an awful lot of awfulness here, but it really came because we were not being active. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. I'm not blaming us. I mean, they put us into that position. Everything is fine. We got you covered. If I told you, did you see the picture I posted and it had a wolf with sheep skin on top of it and the head and everything? And it, yep. And it says, you know, that the sheep spends its entire life afraid of the wolf only to be eaten by the shepherd.
Right.
You know, what a profound statement that is.
Yep.
Because you think that they're being, that you're doing all this stuff and you're being protected by this government, and this government has essentially put you in a state of enslavement that you don't even realize. But now you're waking up because they decided, we got too many slaves, we need to kill some of them off. So then they started with the 5G, and that was, they're hurrying it up because they're realizing too many people are waking up.
Yep.
And I think we've passed, you know, a point, but let's just all wake up really nice and sweet and easy. It doesn't have to be full of drama. In the new reality, there is no drama like the drama that is in this old one, this matrix of, yucky.
You're right. I remember back years ago in Sunday school when everyone was going on about the Lamb of God and this and that and the other. And, you know, I did mention, you know what happens to sheep? You know, I mean, they end up being slaughtered. They end up being eaten and fleeced and other terrible things by shepherds. And, you know, people are so indoctrinated at that time, they, ooh, you can't say that. It's da-da-da-da-da. Now I see those same people showing up at their city council meetings. And you're right, Nancy, that's where it starts. Go to your city council meeting, find out when they meet, and see what's on the agenda, and let's talk about 5G, because it's the most important thing. I think we have to jump forward to the 5G before we can tackle other issues, because that really is an endgame scenario. You know, the Koch brothers and other such organizations bought local government long before they bought the state government, long before they bought the federal government off. So let's, if we the people, as Nancy says, get up there, get to your local city council meetings, and show your councillors that the people are waking up. They have absolutely no option but to check their data and to respond to the needs of the people. And enough of us get together, the government may collapse under the weight of its own dysfunction, and then we, you know, start all over again. Or, heavens above, it might actually become more responsive to the needs of the people. We do have some sensible politicians, not a lot, making some noises about big change and primarily about lobbyists and corporations, because that's where it's all at. George Orwell and Aldous Huxley did not know that they were writing training manuals. Yeah.
Or maybe they did.
Yeah, maybe they did. We're warning you, chaps. Monday,
on the 11th, in Taos, New Mexico, they're having a meeting of the town council to decide whether they're going to pursue it or they're going to put it into stop until you can prove that this is safe, which is dead in the water because they'll never prove it safe.
Right.
So everybody just think of this little very, very beautiful, beautiful town with a tremendous history, especially going back into the Native American history, that their council people wake up. You know, that they go with the truth and the enlightenment and the facts, not the crazy stories that are associated with it. Just wake up. Yep. Because that's the key, is there's people in power that all they have to do is say no. And there's no repercussion to it. The law is very clear. You know, if the federal government exceeds its powers, then it's up to the people to stop them. And we're the people.
Which means, going back to the civics thing, it's time to really push for civics training back in schools.
Oh, absolutely.
And absolutely. Really push. Parents out there, come on. You know, I'm blessed not to have children, but the rest of you that do, get out there and really have a think about all of these rights that you're giving away to the government, that what they can do and what they can't do to your children. I mean, what next? Really, come on.
Well,
they
don't own their children. Parents don't own their children.
Not at this point, they don't, no.
No, they legally do not. That's why states can take the children away. Because when you go to the hospital and have a baby, then you have a certificate of birth, of live birth, okay, certified by a doctor. That document goes to the state. The state sends it to the feds. The feds send it to the World Banking Association, or World Bank. And in there, that goes as an asset of the United States, because over your lifetime of your child, there's going to be this estimated amount of taxes that they're going to pay. Now, this is true. This is absolutely true.
It is true. But I just wonder how many people have thought about it the way that you just articulated it.
Well,
not a lot.
not a lot. But the fact of the matter is if you look at a birth certificate, it says it's a treasury document. It gives you a number there. Well, that's the number of a document that is saying that you're an indentured servant of the United States. You're a slave. You know,
there you go.
It's all legal in their eyes. It's not legal at all under the Constitution, and that's what they're afraid of, is that people are going to wake up and say, wait a minute, when did you make the first, this will be the question because this is the key, when did you make the first declaration of an emergency, a national emergency? Because when they made that, it essentially disconnected anything after the Constitution. The Constitution is put on the shelf, and we're going to disregard this because we're in a state of emergency. That's when the problem started. All right. And they have essentially, they made a law that said you can declare a state of emergency, but nobody made a law to say, how do you get rid of it? So since the time of the Civil War, and it's kind of cloudy as to what that is, but definitely by the time of Woodrow Wilson, he declared a state of emergency, and then Franklin D. did it and took all the gold. And then the reason that I know all this is because the Senate of the United States got freaked out because Richard Nixon had already announced three state of emergencies, and they didn't know where he was going to take this. So they set up a group to look at and see what this thing is, because all the, what it's saying is that any law that's made within that period of time is essentially unconstitutional, because it was never made a law under the Constitution. It's a legal technicality, but that's what the Senate was realizing, is that I forget the numbers. It's been so long. But it was like every document, every legal thing that they had done since at least Woodrow Wilson was essentially illegal. And they were such brave and dedicated patriots that they said, somebody should look into this. And nothing's been done. And that was in the early 90s, 92, I think it was, that they did that.
Okay. Well, boy, that's interesting.
So, yeah.
And it's time.
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy. You just go back to the, you see, what all started was back after the Civil War, because we had a country that was just broken north and south. The economies were, you know, just awful, and a lot of debt. So the bankers said to the Congress, now Lincoln's not in the picture anymore, but they say to the Congress, okay, we will pay off your debts here if you just give us the District of Columbia, which is 10 square miles. That was the only federal, that was the only property the federal government was supposed to control, unless they bought property or it was obtained by war. All of this federal usurping of state land is absolutely illegal by the Constitution.
Illegal.
Absolutely illegal.
Oh, my God. Illegal. Wow.
All right. So, anyway, so they get, the bankers get that, and it's a Bill of 71, 1871, I think. I think it's 71. I get confused, but it's right after the Civil War. And so, but see, when I heard this story, I know people have heard me tell this before, but I don't think I've said it to you, Ani, and you might not know it, and it's really kind of intriguing, in that the first understanding or glimpse that this was true, that all this, that there was a corporation running the country, came from a woman who was giving a speech at a small rally of the Tea Party. And she was explaining what I just explained without emotion, but she was in absolute tears. She was sobbing because the nation, the country, everything about what she thought she was living in was not true. And she was so emotional, even though I thought it was a kind of crazy story she was telling, I looked into it. And then I wrote a blog about it. And then I went back to the blog a few years later and I said, this can't possibly be true. And I went even deeper into the records and got the actual document that set this all in motion from the 43rd Congress. And I went through it like every single word I looked at it. And sure enough, they had put a stipulation in there and it said that if the Congress changed its mind in the future, all they had to do was cite the paragraph and it would be null and void. So all they have to do is say, no, you guys, you're out of here. Get out of here. You know, and start over again. We'll be fine. There's no big drama. There's nothing. You know, because the people that are running the problem, running the show are the problem. The people that work there are not. You know, we've got some very dangerous people in charge of the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, but it's the people that are working there that in many ways are unraveling all of the secrecy. The whistleblowers, the stuff that just shows up in, I mean, one of the best examples is how people, somebody asked for freedom of information on something. And inside of it was a document that was very illuminating on how long ago they knew about the dangers of the 5G emissions. And it was back in the 70s. It was an official Army document. And it just gets into something that's going to somebody that's looking at a conspiracy question. You know, they're seeding the information to us, as it were. And that's causing, you know, the documentation to make us look like we do know what we're talking about. And, you know, it's taking it down, too. Which is making it easier for other people, you know, the older generation to say, yeah. I mean, right now, there's like, a dozen of the major players regarding government, the National Association of Counties, of Cities, of municipal, you know, plus one from the telecommunications people that are actually have filed legal suit against the FCC for overreachment per constitution because this of their saying to local governments, you have to do what we, the state governments, you have to do what we say. Okay, that's totally illegal, unconstitutional, and not only these big organizations that in some cases, you know, represent like 32,000 cities, but you got cities themselves. I think there's like almost 50 cities that have filed the same kind of a suit, and there's at least a couple of dozen counties nationwide. Now, that's a drop in the hat of what happens has to happen, but it is. You're able to go to these you know local people and say, look it, we're not saying it, these people are saying it,
right? Yep.
So you know it's really critical that you understand that, you know, we get off into weird things. She's a shaman and I'm a remote viewer and I do a few other things and she does even more and we tell these weird stories, but the fact of the matter is that there's an awful lot of people that wouldn't be considered crazy that agree with us.
yes and thank heavens people are waking up and doing their research, and as we always do like to say in the trade, the truth is hidden in plain view. You have just been distracted from it time and time and time again. And, you know, it's all part of your spiritual practice, people, is to differentiate between what is the inner voice, your voice, and all the chatter that's outside, which is why people like me go on and on and on ad nauseum about the value of taking 20 minutes a day to sit down and do some deep breathing meditation, which is the simplest thing in the world. You breathe using your diaphragm slowly, deeply, and purposefully. And it washes all the triggers and all the chatter out of your energy field. And if you do that every single day, you will know what is your voice and what is the voice outside from the chatter. Your voice will never, ever criticize you or be harsh with you. Your voice will either talk to you in an unemotional, dispassionate way, so you don't get triggered, or it will talk to you kindly and lovingly. But it will never say things to you like, oh, you so-and-so, why did you do that? It will never self-sabotage you. This is very important because there's a lot of information for you to absorb out there. Nancy and I talk about this sort of stuff in our groups all the time. This is our world. For the vast majority of people out there, you're hearing this for the first time. And we know that we are asking you to wake up from what you think is the American dream into something that's more resembling an American nightmare. But we're also asking you to be okay with it and to know that you can negotiate through this. And I know it's difficult. I really know you're going to have to go through outrage and then all of the emotions of how did I let this happen? How did we let this happen? But once we're through on the other side of that, there's clarity, and then we reclaim our minds and we reclaim our country. And America is supposed to be the spiritual beacon for the rest of the world, where religion is transcended into a wonderful type of secular humanism. And this was supposed to be a spiritual beacon for the whole world, and it went wrong. But we can make it right. And when we fix it here in America, the whole world will follow suit. But you'll never be okay with any of this unless you quiet down for some time every day and sort out your voice, the voice of your inner divinity or your supreme cosmic intelligence, and all of the other chatter outside. So please make... Go ahead. I was just...
I've got this... Have you ever heard of the term gamma breath?
Yes.
Okay. I've actually got this girl, Jody Nearing, who does this really short 2 minutes and 42 seconds of gamma breath that I find very, very beneficial. And it's so quick to easy to remember. Shall we play it so that people understand how fast they can get into that framework?
Go ahead. Do your thing.
Okay. I'm doing my thing here, I think. Okay. Here we go.
Jody Nearing presenting gamma breathing.
The gamma breath is just a sequence of breathing. It's a breath sequence that we use different patterns of breath. We focus on four main breath patterns: the in mouth, out mouth, the in mouth, out nose, the in nose, out nose, and the in nose, out mouth. And each one connects us up to a different portion of the brain. So we're literally optimizing brain and body function here. All the air before we do the breath. Take a big exhale together. In mouth, out mouth. Full body breaths. In mouth, out nose. In nose, out nose. It's okay to hear yourself breathe. Now in nose, out mouth. Good. We're going to do the cycle again. In mouth, out mouth. In mouth, out nose. In and out the nose. Now in nose, out mouth. And one more round. In mouth, out mouth. In mouth, out nose. In nose, out nose. In nose, out mouth. And we just do one more mouth-mouth breath to complete the cycle.
So there you have it.
Nice.
I'm feeling good.
No, that really is beneficial, and it's quick, and you can do that several times a day.
Anytime you're stressed.
Yeah. I just advise people, if that resonates, do it. Oh, there's so many other breath protocols. Alternate nostril breathing is wonderful. Go to YouTube, you know, pick out lots of breath protocols. Do something that you know you can stick with. But do it every day, because unless, you know, you want a functional life, you need a clean, stable aura. So the breath is our equivalent of a hard reboot for a computer. So, yeah, no, thank you for reminding us of that one, Nancy. That's anything that you can do in under 3 minutes, I think, is very beneficial for today's people.
Yes, and, you know, she gets us through it very efficiently. So it's and once you do it, I mean, seriously, I look at this, and all I have to do is look at it. I don't even have to play it to remember that it's a sequence. You know, so kind of like when you're doing it, think about, well, when I look at that, I'm going to think about this, and I'm going to do it again. To leave little clues in your own environment just to make you stop for 3 minutes. Give yourself 3 minutes to balance out. And it doesn't even have to be that long. Sometimes I shorten it, you know. I don't do the whole three repetitions. I do it one straight through, and I'm okay.
Good, good. Yeah, we need tools, lots of tools.
And good friends. That we get, that we sometimes will never meet in the 3D.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It is an interesting place. So, what else would you like to tell the audience? Gems of wisdom.
Gems of wisdom.
Or funny stuff. I mean, because you can tell some funny stories.
I could. I know. It's just every day, I think, I look around me and there's always something that makes me giggle for various different reasons. This has been a particularly hard week for me. I have so many people with so many challenges. I haven't really had a moment to myself to sit back and giggle. I think this is the first downtime that I've had with you this week. I think I'm just going to remind people that the value of laughter, the value of giggling, and how beneficial it is to the human aura. I'm kind of stuck on the human aura today. And there's this wonderful thing called laughter yoga. And again, go to YouTube and put that in, and you'll find this wonderful Indian gentleman who starts a laugh group. And he starts the laugh, and before you know it, everybody is laughing, and then it just goes and goes and goes. Something beautiful happens when we laugh, and we laugh as a group. We get completely silly. We get completely relaxed. We laugh so much, especially if you laugh so much that you're snorting at the end of it, and all of your muscles turn to jelly. And again, it's a very quick and pleasant way of removing the electrical disruptions in your aura that we call triggers. So that's my parting word of wisdom to you today. If you don't have anyone to laugh with, stand in front of the mirror and just start to laugh with yourself. Very beneficial to the body's electricity. Or listen to my poem on marijuana on YouTube and get laughing on that one. Yeah. That'll make you laugh.
I went there in my head. She does this one on marijuana that it is so funny, and I thought she had to have been really stoned, but she said no, she hadn't even partaked, but she was, it's just, you can't
help they don't let you smoke in the studio, Nancy.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't realizing you were in a studio. I thought maybe you had a back room with this, because
it was just
you know, it's too funny. I was laughing so hard.
We actually go to a professional television studio. So,
you weren't on camera. This was your
voice.
No,
I wasn't.
It was the poem thing.
This is my poem. Yeah.
Well, do you have anyone that you can think of off the top of your head that might bring joy to people?
Well, I'm going to recite the pot poem, because that's only one I remember. Only one I remember offhand.
Good.
So, and I hope I remember it, because it goes. Roses are red, some squirrels are grey, some peeps are fat, and some waste away. Tomorrow may happen, but then again it may not. All I know that's for certain is that I'm high, I'm really high on pot.
So you do that so well, and you say you're not even smoking it. Oh my
I'm
God.
I'm not smoking, Nancy. I promise it's a work day. I'm 6 years old. I only smoke during equinox ceremonies now.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons that we brought Dolly over to the Cosmic Reality Show, was because she starts to giggle, and Walt just, you know, he's beside himself. He has to giggle with her.
Yep.
And it lightens up things, you know. It's always good to have a good giggler.
You got to have a giggler when you're talking about social awareness. Yes.
Oh, but I'm so glad about that, too, because... Yes, it's a pretty awful situation we find ourselves in, but there is also this sense of, yes, but we're all in it together, you know? And there's less strain on people, you know? You don't have to get in people's faces and try to say, listen to me, you know, because they're actually hearing it from their own friends.
Yep. Yeah, the conversation's changing to what are you going to do about it to what are we going to do about it.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you got anything exciting starting to happen?
Let's see. Coming up this week, I got a class on home and property clearing next week. No, I think it's actually just the usual round of ghosts and demons and paranormal anomalies and critters and oh my, all that sort of thing. But the beauty of this work is you think you know something and you show up somewhere and you know nothing. Always learning something new. So we'll go with that.
We'll have to get you to tell your stories. I that's one of the things I miss from Walt when he was doing shamanic journeying for people. And he'd come and he'd tell the stories about his journeys. And
I'll have some stories for you. I'll have some stories for you next month.
Yeah, let's do stories. I love stories.
Okay, we'll do stories. We'll do stories. I got plenty of those.
Awesome. Listen, thank you so very, very much. I appreciate
you. It was
a
pleasure, Nancy. Always a pleasure with you.
And I'm so glad that you're appreciating the spirit spiral.
Yes.
And those people that want more information, go over to cosmicreality.net. You'll find information. Or contact us and we'll tell you. Okay, then. We're out of here. Be safe, everybody. Be blessed. And thanks again, honey. Really love you.
Bye-bye.
Say what? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.